It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Welcome once again to Valley Edition. I'm Mike Malevsky, and today in the studio, my guests are Zaz Hollander and Terry Snyder. Welcome, Terry.
How you doing, Mike?
I am doing fine today. But let's start with you, Terry, because I understand that you have recently had the opportunity to be interviewed by someone from another news organization, and maybe you could share some of what other people are interested in here in Alaska.
Yeah, so one of the hats that I wear is as AARP state president, and my offices were contacted about an interview with a D.C. reporter from Yahoo News. Sorry for the background noise here. I'm in a parking lot calling in. And so I just finished that interview, and I was a little worried about it because I didn't know the reporter, but he was actually quite nice and very interested in how the healthcare bill was going to affect not only seniors but people in Alaska in general. He was most concerned, it seemed like, on how the expansion would be affected by it, and also what clinics. He's been going around talking to different clinics that are struggling, and of course we know in the news from the ADN article that one in Anchorage closed yesterday that just opened about 6 months ago, Alaska Regional Hospital. So kind of trying to talk from people around the valley and Anchorage down to Seward about the impacts to healthcare in the state. So it was great. It was good to hear that they're wanting to know what's going on in all corners of our country as we undergo this mass change in direction, or so it seems, in healthcare. So pretty interesting.
And I'm wondering whether in the process you also picked up anything from him referencing other places around the country.
You know, he didn't. He's first time in Alaska. He's kind of got that look that people for the first time being here have. He's a little overwhelmed by everything, I think. But mostly he's the health reporter for Yahoo News, so he's mostly looking at this particular part of the healthcare bill. He didn't really, I was worried maybe we were going to have to talk about the politics of it, and being from a nonpartisan organization, I was hoping that wouldn't come up too much, and it didn't. He was really concerned about some of the stories of people that are affected. We have plenty of those, that's for sure. So this is his kind of, I guess they wanted to send a reporter to Alaska, and he's the guy that got to come, and it'll be a look forward to seeing how it comes out. There should be something, I think, the first of the week, and there's no news feed about it.
Okay, and I referenced that Alaska Dispatch News article in today's paper about the closure of the clinic that had been a Alaska Regional Hospital extension. And it seemed to me that the bottom line there was the bottom line. It was all about the money, or the misjudgment, if you will, about the kind of patients that would be seen there.
Yeah.
And either you or Zaz have further comments about that?
Go ahead, Zaz. I have a few thoughts, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, at least in part, either the demographic changed or Alaska Regional's read on their future patient load was off, but the issue was that they were seeing far more people with kind of critical health needs and mental health issues than they expected. And I was interested because I didn't write that story, but I am working on one today about Mat-Su Regional up here has applied to the state for permission, essentially, to open a new 36-bed kind of a mental health wing, where they would treat involuntary psych admits in the same way that API does, and not have to send them to API, and also do some detox and some drug treatment or substance abuse treatment. And so they are just starting, it's called the Certificate of Need process with DHSS.
So Zaz, is that their plan for the third floor of that building then?
It would be a separate unit next to the ER or the ED.
Came out of that article to me, and we did talk about that this morning, is that there is, I think, an underestimation by the people crafting this bill, how sick we really are as a society. And it was what they hoped to do in Anchorage anyway, was to get some of the people that were coming to the emergency room for more routine things to actually go to that clinic. And what they did see is the people, it's an underserved area that they opened up the clinic in, and they were seeing a lot more chronic and a lot more more complicated visits, and they weren't prepared for that next step. So it'll be interesting. You've got a good article to write about, Zaz, and I think the Medicaid expansion is going to be part of your story, too, because, you know, part of that expansion was the behavioral health piece that now is in jeopardy for that funding, right?
I'm just focusing on the hospital's application right now. Other people are looking at the broader issues of Medicaid.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, this particular article struck home to me because in all of the discussions about the big dollars and speaking about categories of service and so on, this particular example showed even when you're in the business and you've done your market analysis and you understand service, the hospital underestimated the draw, the attraction of providing service in a local area would have. I mean, that leapt right out at me. And I'm wondering if that is the kind of thing that we are also looking at potentially into the future, whatever changes occur with Medicaid funding and the provision of services, that if you provide a service somewhere, then you will begin to surface the true situation as far as the health of a population in a local area. So,
and we have to also keep in mind in Alaska that we have 200 communities that aren't serviced by road. And so there's probably way more need than what people anticipate for those services, particularly when you get into areas of addiction and behavioral health.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, Terry, you have not so long ago been to Washington, D.C. You've had a chance to talk to our delegation there. And, of course, we're just in the so-called 4th of July break. And presumably our senators and representative will be back here in the state contacting people or just being here and then returning after that to continue on with something. Have you picked up anything in terms of the likely reception, if you will, that a representative or a senator will have here? Or are you aware of any of the events or opportunities people would have for sharing their opinions about health care?
Well, I was in both their offices this week in the Valley, and everything was pretty close-lipped about what their plans were over the holiday. I think there was some thought that they may not even come back, depending on what was, you know, what happens there today. But they are, you know, basically on break. I think they're hearing plenty. They've all the offices have remarked to me that they've never seen anything like this. Somebody, one staff member in one of the offices told me that she'd been there a long time or been part of the legislative body for a long time, and they hadn't seen this much outrage and, you know, a contact since, you know, people protesting sort of since the Vietnam War, which is a big remark. So they're getting lots of it. I hope they do get out in their communities and get real stories, because I think that's what's going to make the difference. They're pretty insulated back there. There have been people going to their offices with their stories, personal stories, and you can tell it's having an effect, plus, you know, the thousands and thousands of phone calls that they're getting. So one would hope they would. I don't know that anything is organized at this point during the holiday. Maybe everybody just takes a break and takes a different look at it. But they're on a pretty strict timeline by getting something out by the end of July if they're really going to pass a bill before the August break. So I heard somebody refer to it this morning as the zombie bill, that you just can't turn your back for a minute.
Right.
That things are going to change really quickly. So it's really hard to say.
Okay. Well, I just want to remind listeners that this is Valley Edition, where we discuss issues relevant to the Matsu Valley. I'm your host, Mike Malevsky, and the guests today are Zaz Hollander and Terry Snyder. Well, let's switch focus to another place that's quiet, but in this case seems to be still officially in session, and I'm talking about the Alaska State Legislature. I'm going to guess that the Valley delegation will be home for the 4th of July. I know that many people here have been who are part of that delegation have been participating at a distance, if you will, by watching, calling in, because officially, as I understand, this special session still goes on. Any comments about that?
Well, I think that they're expected to go back to work. I heard back in the Capitol on the 12th. Did anybody hear that this morning? That was the last word I heard. They had to, or the 10th, I think. They have to be done. They only have about 5 days left of the special session. So there is some plans for them to go back.
Right. And there's some disagreement or discussion between the Senate and the House about whether to deal with a portion of taxes associated with and credits associated with the oil industry or not. As I understand, that's probably the only piece that looks like it may have a chance of being dealt with if those two bodies can come to an agreement.
It would seem. I don't know. Zaz might have some more inside information, but I haven't gotten any.
Yeah, I mean, we had a story today about the press conference they held yesterday in Juneau. In Anchorage, sorry, which is a pretty good indicator of the session, but that it's basically the Senate is saying that they're okay giving up, you know, these cash credits to oil companies, whether or not they're producing. And the House said, well, that, yeah, we agree, but we need to do more than that. So
right.
The quote from Senator Kevin Meyer was, and basically the Senate is not going to, has rejected that, basically a tax increase for oil companies. Meyer said, you know, you just can't get the whole enchilada.
Right.
Which, I don't know, maybe that's not the first time he said that phrase.
Maybe.
This session.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. There's a interesting article I happened to read in preparation for this interview today that Alaska Trends had from the Labor Department about, in their April edition, about recessions and how this recession is so much different than other recessions and how much it depends, basically, for the because of the forecast of oil not being so good in the future, to actually do something else. So it's an interesting article. Anybody wants to go back and read it, worthwhile.
Okay. Well, let's switch to something that we can actually see as a concrete event. And I'm speaking about the bear in my bedroom, a story. I found that to be interesting. A young man is sleeping soundly and suddenly crashing through the window, a black bear that looks around and says, "This isn't my house," and goes back out the window. Kid goes upstairs and says to the parent, "There's a bear in my room." What do you think about, Zaz? You've been following bear stuff. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I haven't been followed by a bear in that way. I think that is the latest incident in a kind of a crazy summer, bear-wise. Interestingly, one of the biologists we interviewed for our story on that basically said that he'd heard of, I think it was Rick Finnett, a retired fish and game biologist. He said he's heard of that once before, and it's normally, and it, as normal as it is, when a bear is being chased by a dog or something, that bears don't generally choose to run through a window, that bears are kind of forced in that direction. But I guess the kid's parents didn't believe him at first.
Initially, but came around, and when they saw the broken window and the claw marks on the wall.
Yeah, and the bloody splatter on the wall.
Right. Okay. So,
Zaz, you're a parent. What would your reaction be?
Go back to bed. It's not a bear. You're having a dream.
Okay. Well, speaking about dreams, on a national level, there's been a lot of media discussion about the latest tweet that latest tweet from the president, attacking one of the co-hosts for Morning Joe, Mika Brzezinski, and a very, very wide response, much of it negative toward this most recent use of tweets, particularly since it seemed to be aimed at Mika rather than Joe or the two of them, et cetera. I was curious about your two reactions to that. Zaz first?
My reaction to that is, blech. Would be my reaction. It's, you know, the president is getting heat from both sides on this one, and it's inappropriate for a president of any country to broadcast his misogynistic feelings in that kind of platform. It's a new disappointment.
Okay, Terry.
Oh, you know, that kind of says it all. All I can say is it's creepy. you know, it's creepy for him to say that sort of thing. And I'm glad that Senator Murkowski was quick to the draw to say something about it being creepy and her disdain for it. So it is, that's what's going to take. It's going to take people pushing back from the side he has to do business with, basically. And it's a distraction that we don't need right now. And it speaks to the way he feels about women way too loudly, in my mind.
And of course, the interesting thing to when you mention Senator Murkowski, of course, there were those photos that she was recently at lunch sitting beside the president. And so if you want to say there's somebody who has the opportunity to speak directly to him and is presumably a valuable potential resource in the Senate, for her to make that statement, I would think should hit home. But that's one of the difficulties that seems to be out there. How to convey the sense of this from such a wide range of people to the president so that he would actually hear it, perhaps, and adjust or understand where people are coming from.
Maybe he's listening today.
It could be. It could be. That would be good. Okay. Well, the other, let's slip back here and all the way to Palmer, Alaska. Tuesday, we had a meeting of the Palmer City Council. It went for many hours, over 4 hours, and it was an example of a discussion about things that are particularly important locally. And the first one that took most of the time was a rezoning. And this has a big history. Today, or on Friday morning, there was an opportunity for the city manager to summarize the history of what appeared to be a simple rezoning, and we covered it, so I'm sort of tuned up to say, basically, over a number of years, a multi-unit development has been proposed for an area of about 9 acres near the Job Corps Center, the MTA Events Center, and Mountain Rose, another development, and it finally has come after a lawsuit and a lot of discussion to have the majority of people say yes. They were not, at the very least, they were not opposed, and in many cases were supporting the development of a multi-unit, 84-unit development for seniors over the age of 55, rental units, 1 and 2 bedroom, and if the rest of it works out and the owner of the property sells to the developer, this ground will be broken next spring. But it seems to be on its way. Any questions or other comments, Terry?
Well, there's no doubt we need to have more housing, more affordable housing for seniors. Senior Palmer's a great area for people to be able to, it's more walkable than anywhere else in the borough. And I think what I got out of this was, it was a long process. This has gone through the Planning Commission. It was appealed. It's really been gone through the ringer. But, you know, this is also why we have a public process. And I think at the end of the day, I think you said, Mike, the vote was 6-1. I think people understood it more. There was still some people that aren't going to be happy. That's the way these things go on just about every development. But in the end, it sounds like they came to some extra terms that made it more palatable to everybody. Maybe Zoss knows more about the actual nuts and bolts of the story.
No, you know, I haven't been following this one, but it, in general, sounds as if, you know, because it's within the city of Palmer, so many more opportunities for conditions would apply rather than going through the borough process.
Right, and just a reminder for listeners that might not be aware, the same development group that is proposing this, is well on its way with a similar development in Wasilla. And that is in progress, and people can actually go and take a look and see where the kind of feel of the place where they have moved along in building the project there. So it's not as if this is an organization that's come in, this is the first time. They've apparently done developments of this sort in many, many other communities. But kudos to the Palmer City Council for taking the time and to listening to people and to have all that happen. The other thing I'd like to do is remind listeners who are tuning in late. We have a few more minutes. This is Valley Edition. I'm Mike Malefsky. My guests today are Terry Snyder and Zaz Hollander. Big culmination this week, the transfer of dispatch services from Palmer Dispatch Center, the majority of services, onto a location in Wasilla. In speaking with the city manager today, went off pretty much without a hitch, seems to be working fine, and Palmer's Dispatch Center will continue to exist, but will dispatch Palmer Police and Palmer Fire Department here while remaining in contact with the new facility over in Wasilla. And so I just wanted to share that seemed to be working pretty well at this point.
Yeah, I listened to the actual moment of transition at 10 a.m.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And?
It was pretty seamless. The MATCOM dispatchers, I don't know how many, if any, came over. I mean, Palmer isn't downsizing, as I understand it, that much. When I talked to the city manager months ago, I think he said they would be dropping from 12 to 9 because they're still going to be dispatching for the city of Palmer. And I don't know if the three who were displaced went over to MATCOM or not.
It
sounded pretty good.
Yeah, and it's my understanding they did, so that there was some ability to have that kind of experience back and forth.
One comment from one of the central fire officials asking dispatchers to key their mics longer before they started talking because the first half of whatever they were saying was dropping. But it was a busy day. There was actually an injury rollover literally across the street from my house. And everybody got taken care of, and not just there, but there were a lot of calls. And I guess when Palmer signed off for the day, 9G Base signed off for the day, they said a thank you to all the responders.
Oh, very good. Very nicely done. Yes, there was a lot of work that went into it, and people probably don't appreciate the amount of work. I mean, to make this happen and do it so that things continue on well is a tribute to the professionalism of those dispatchers, as well as the people that had to organize and make it happen and move the equipment and everything else. So I suspect things will be fine as we roll into the 4th of July. And the question is, of course, fireworks in the valley, fireworks in Palmer, Wasilla, and so on. There's official fireworks permitted, and they're going to be happening in Wasilla. Zaz, do you go and watch those fireworks in Wasilla on the 4th?
I don't think I've ever been to the Wasilla fireworks. I'll be at the Willow Parade this year.
Ah, okay. All right. And I did a quick check. Those people who are going to travel on down to Seward for the Mount Marathon run, there are, of course, fireworks down there. There are fireworks in Whittier. There are fireworks in a variety of places that are happening, most of them happening late at night, as you might expect, between 11 p.m., maybe midnight, et cetera. But the reminder is that, unlike New Year's, really fireworks are not permitted within the city of Palmer if you decide you want to set off your own fireworks.
You can buy them in Houston, but yeah, you can't set them off anywhere in the borough.
But other than that,
well, it's good that we're getting a little rain. If people don't follow that,
yeah, and you know they won't, so it is good.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And and I'm projecting ahead here, looking and saying it looks as if there's going to be an opening for the sun on the 4th of July. There will be the continuing weather that we've been experiencing, which is clouds and a little bit of rain maybe, and then some sun and so on. But I just have to mention one other event, the 4th of July, happening, in this case, not down in Seward, but up north in Glacier View. And of course, I'm referring to an event that has been increasingly popular and more people seem to be going to. And this is the great vehicle crash, where vehicles are driven off a bluff and fly through the air, inland, and the ground below. It started out as
picks up that mess.
Oh, it's all done here. First of all, I mention this because I've been assured that, number one, it happens on private property. The vehicles are prepared so they're not filled with all kinds of bad things, and the property owner picks up the results of the crash after the event.
Sounds like freedom to me.
I can only say it started out being hundreds, It started out being a kind of a potluck for the community, and there is some suggestion there may be thousands of people there this year. So with that, I want to wrap up this week's Valley Edition, and thanks to the guests, Zaz Hollander. Thank you, Zaz.
Great to be here, Mike.
And thank you, Terry Snyder. Thank you, Terry.
Go have a safe holiday.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us. I'm Mike Malevsky, and I hope you have a safe and happy 4th of July. Thank you.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.